Blog Talk Radio.
Women have the power to transform this world. We can end crime and violence if we all agree to do one thing: share. Let's share our wisdom, share our time, share our talents, share our finances, but most of all, let's share our love. This is the Female Solution. Join me, Naima Latif, every morning, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time, as we bring you stimulating discussions about the issues affecting our lives. If you're listening online at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution, press the blue button that says follow and get our daily topics every morning directly to your email and your smartphone.
Hi, I'm Naima Latif, executive producer of the Female Solution Radio Show. We invite you to call in 515-605-9325 and participate in this daily think tank as we examine the challenges we face and develop solutions that restore peace and harmony. We are global transformers, changing the world from the way it is to the way it should be. We are one. Wherever we live on this earth, we are one human family. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to extend a greeting to all the members of our family, whenever and wherever you may be listening around the world. To our family in China, Ni Hao. In India, Namaste. In Japan, Konnichiwa. In Korea, Annyeonghaseyo. In Russia, Zdravstvuyte. In Germany, Guten Tag. In Poland, Dzień dobry. In France, bonjour. In Spain, hola. In Italy, ciao. In Egypt, ahlan wa sahlan. In Ghana, akwaba. In Nigeria, peleo. In South Africa, sawubona. In Senegal, nanga def. In Kenya, jambo. In Israel, shalom. In Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Saudi Arabia, assalamu alaikum. Greetings, and may peace be upon you all.
rising. Hello, hello, everyone. Hello. My name is Dr. Debbie Green, and this is Soulful Solutions. I want to welcome you today, and we're going to be talking about a specific topic. This topic is something that every person on this earth has to deal with at some given time, and that's, you know, it's not easy when we hear, you know, about someone getting ready to, you know, transition, you know, or die, you know. So that news is sometimes very unsettling for us. So we want to offer some encouragement, some education, as well as some comfort on this topic. How do you handle news of a terminal illness? What's the first thing that happens? What's the first emotion that's felt? You know, what is the next choice? What's the next decision? Because remember, this is something that disturbs the peace of a person's life. And terminal illness is one of those things that you give a actual date of a roundabout time of how long a person is going to be in existence. So it's not an easy thing. It's difficult. But I want to make it somewhat understandable if I can. One thing about terminal illness is it's more of a not so much a death notice. It's just that that person or that individual, you know, is at a place in their life where things are actually ending on earth, but not in the spiritual realm. So let me explain that to you. We have these earthly bodies, and these earthly bodies are, you know, they have a time limit on them, okay? And the thing about it is, some people think they will live forever, and yeah, we all want to. We all want to live forever. You know, we want our loved ones to live forever. We want to enjoy the time that we have with them. And sometimes we get so close that we just don't want to let them go. And it's understandable. So I just, like I said, I want to bring some understanding with that topic to how do you adjust to this new normal, because that's what it is. It's a new normal. It's a new normal, a new normal that does not feel well. It can disturb your activities of daily living. You know, it can shift everything in your life. But at the same token, we have to find some peace in it. Some peace in it. One thing about grief, has the actual stages. They have actual stages that we go through. That first stage is called emotional shock. Like, oh my goodness, this is happening, and I have no control over this thing. And when we first hear it, we then feel it. We don't feel it first. It's first a thought. Then the feeling of that thought then starts. So what happens, it literally, you hear it in your mind, you're trying to make sense of it, and then because it's a heart issue, so the emotions then kind of, at that point, they just continue to what I call erupt. They totally erupt because this is not something you want, because it's taking the control away. It's taking the control away, and it makes you feel, as I said, sometimes helpless, powerless, in it all. Because remember, when you hear something like this, you focus on, believe it or not, yourself for a moment. You don't focus on the person that has gotten the terminal illness. Not yet. You only focus on what you feel. So, Naima, are you there?
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, I think one of the things, and you said a key thing, people focus on themselves. They think, you know, my loved one's going to leave me. And so, you know, in the beginning, it is all about you, how you feel about them being gone and what they mean to you. And, you know, if there's somebody you depend on, like a spouse or someone or even a parent, you know, how their leaving is going to affect your life. Of course, all of us come here with a birth date and a death date. We are not allowed to know that consciously because, as you said, it, you know, once you focus on the day you're going to end,
mm-hmm.
it affects your whole life. So what if you knew your whole life, the exact day that you were going to make your exit? You'd be so focused on that that you wouldn't do the things in between time that you came here to do. So mercifully, we're not really allowed to know the exact date and time that we have planned to make our exit. But there is a time our soul knows it's going to return to the non-physical. So when people are given a date by a doctor, oh, well, you've got 6 months to live, you know, I can imagine, well, of course, I've been through that with my husband, and, you know, gratefully, he was here a year beyond what they gave him, but I think the things people say when they find out they're going to have, that someone has a terminal illness, I don't know if it's helpful, the language we use, like we say, well, are you going to, you know, beat this illness? Well, okay, you can maybe overcome it, but you're still going to transition at some point in life.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if we should look at transitioning from an illness as a failure to beat it, because that's kind of how it's presented. And I don't know if that's helpful. What do you think about that?
Absolutely, and it puts the struggle in it.
Yeah.
See?
Like you're not fighting hard enough, you know.
Right.
We spent a whole lot
yeah.
being made to feel a failure. Do you really need to feel like we failed at death? I mean, I don't know.
Well, one thing about death is, and I think the taboo with it is, that it has to be painful, you know, that it has to be a discomfort. The discomfort is the physical person no longer being there.
Mm-hmm.
That's the discomfort. But the transition is relatively very, very peaceful. And we're talking about terminal illness, not sudden death, because sudden death is not peaceful, because
mm-hmm.
it's abrupt.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Abrupt.
And you feel like someone has taken something from you. So somebody had gotten murdered or gotten killed in a car accident, or, you know, that's a different type of transition. But terminal illness is when you have a notice, okay? For example, you have a notice that this thing is going to happen, and you have a preparation date. The preparation date is given with the notice. So if you allow yourself to struggle in that, then you won't have time to prepare.
Mm.
You know, and as far as beating it, a lot of people, and this is something that people do all the time. You know, they go through, let's say, for example, cancer.
Yeah.
They go through their treatments. They go through all of their, you know, what they call it, I call it mental filtering of this thing that they're dealing with. And then here comes, they may go in remission, and then something happens on another testing date that they find that it's back.
Mm.
So now they got to start all over again and start, you know, they go through the same processes over and over and over. But when it gets to that point where there's nothing else left to do, when the doctors say to you, there's nothing else we can do, so the only thing to do is prepare. Our creator, you know, our higher power is so gentle with us. He gives us time. And I believe that's what it is. He gives the individual that's transitioning time. He gives the people that are around this person time. So it's time to adjust and also let that person know, because they're the one that's feeling it.
Right.
And if you're struggling around them, oh, no, I don't want you to go. I want you to stay. I don't know how to handle this. This is too much for me. All of that energy that you feel is going into that person, and now they're struggling.
Yeah.
And you're taking the peace away.
Yeah. And there was a point when I realized, even with my husband, that I'm keeping you here. I need to let you go. Because he said, I'm tired, you know, and his body was dealing with cancer that, you know, spreads. And at a certain point, your body is not able to hold your life force energy, and it's painful to keep staying in that body. So, I mean, we had time. We had a good year to emotionally prepare, and he went through the various stages of his body weakening, and we didn't go through chemotherapy until the very last thing. It's like, okay, because once you start that treatment, it literally weakens you so much that you're alive, but barely, you know. And so it's
right.
Not like,
yeah,
I'm going through this treatment that's weakening me so much I really don't have a quality of life. So that our decision was to not do chemotherapy, to have him go through all the things that were happening in our family, our daughter graduating from high school and preparing for college, and, you know, going and visiting the campus, and just all the different things. We were finishing a film that we had done together. So we were trying to do all of these different things and have him at his optimum strength before finally, you know, he lost a lot of weight and everything. And so
yeah.
We finally said, okay, we're going to try the chemotherapy. And then at last, when the doctor said, well, okay, if we can just give him a higher dose, because he was already bedridden once we started the chemotherapy, and we just said, you know, no, that's it. Because the nausea and all the other things that come with chemotherapy, there's a point where the treatment is keeping you alive, but it's giving you such a low quality of life, you just decide, I'd rather just deal with what I'm dealing with and let this transition happen if that's what's to be. And that's a challenging decision to make as well, because that means your loved ones have to let you go. Now, I went through with my mother-in-law. She had Alzheimer's, and, you know, in her last moments, you know, they had her hooked into the, you know, the machines and all of that. And she was still conscious. She had the tube down her throat. And when I went to the hospital to see her, I could look in her eyes, and it was like, would you all unhook these things and let me go? I don't want to be here. And I knew it was difficult for her sons, because you keep hoping to hold on to somebody, but we have to realize there is an exit, and you don't want it to be painful. You know, you don't want them to suffer their way out of here.
Correct.
So I know putting people on life support is always a challenging decision. I know of some people, they've been on life support a while, and then they came out of a coma or whatever. And then there have been some people, they got on life support, and at some point their family just had to say, just, you know, take them off. They're not, they're not progressing. They're literally slowly dying, you know. So what is your thoughts on having someone with a terminal illness hooked onto life support? One thing my husband said is that, you know, once my heart stops, do not have them resuscitate me. Let me go. And
we had
a notice posted on the head of his bed that says, do not resuscitate, because you have to sign papers and everything to that effect.
Mm-hmm.
And it was understood that he did not want artificial life support. But some people feel like, look, let me hold on as long as I can. But what's your quality of life? So how do you help families make that kind of decision if someone should be kept on life support indefinitely, you know, with the hopes that maybe, you know, if they slip into a coma, maybe they'll come back, maybe they'll be able to hang around longer. How do you help families make those kind of decisions?
Well, they have to really understand that life force is not theirs. And the thing about it is people are more codependent than what they should be, and which means that, you know, this thing called love, it will really complicate things at that particular moment. So then you start thinking what I want, not what's best for that person.
Right.
I want them to live.
I want them not to leave. Right.
So I will make a decision on their life, you know, at that time. I will do that because I don't, again, it's almost like you, I don't want to use the word selfish, but at the same token, you have to think about it. If this person is not breathing and they are, if they were suffering prior to them not breathing, and you want to resuscitate them and put them on the breathing apparatus, and in your mind you believe, oh, they'll come back. They'll come back. But then what about that person? What if that person doesn't want to come back?
Right.
And see, this is what families have to realize, and they need to, all, everyone needs to have a living will. While they are healthy-minded, they need to have a living will and make a determination, you know, whether they want a DNA, you know, if they want to be resuscitated or not. A DNR is given to everyone on earth, other than, of course, children, because they have guardians and parents.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm saying is we should have that choice. That person that's going through that transition should have that choice whether to be resuscitated or not. Again, families struggle in this because they don't want that person. They are afraid, and they only get to what they feel because they don't want that person to leave. They don't want, they go right back to those cycles all over again. And, you know, sometimes, you know, if the notice on the soul, like you said, is not prepared and ready, that person will come out and they will live.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen it.
Yeah.
We've seen people, and we heard the stories of people passing away and being resuscitated and come back and live a normal life.
Right. And
you know?
And sometimes they're told on the other side, your job here is not done yet. My associate,
yes,
very close associate, that's what happened to him. He literally died. He was in church and, you know, and as far as people around him, you know, he was gone. But he was in the other realm being told, you still have more work to do. Your job is,
yes,
not here. I think he woke up in the ambulance, you know. So that has happened. And there have been so many people who've had near-death experiences where, you know, they might have been pronounced dead and all of that. And they get to the other side and they are told by other beings, your time is not done yet. Or even some of them report they've been given a choice. Well, you can leave now or you can go back, which you want to do. And sometimes they don't want to go back, but they realize they have to because their mission that they came here to complete isn't complete yet.
Right.
So one thing that I've observed, people who've had near-death experiences, they come back with a totally different point of view of life.
They do, yes.
Total peace about their transition. And now my husband, he had an experience with his grandmother, who was very close to, who raised him and everything. And when she was in the hospital, you know, transitioning, and the family's all around crying and everything, and she called him into the room. She said, I want him to come to the room, and I need to talk to him privately. And because, you know, she had been resuscitated a couple of times. They flatlined. They brought her back. She flatlined. They brought her back. And so she finally had them bring my husband into the room. He was just a teenage boy at the time, but he was always very highly spiritual.
Right.
And so she said, look, tell them, stop bringing me back. Where I am is beautiful. I don't want to come back here. I want to go home. You know, I want to leave.
Home.
Tell them, don't bring me back again. And he was just so moved. He was crying, but it was like tears of joy because she was just so happy to be leaving. And she wanted them to understand that this is not a sad thing, me leaving. I'm going to a good place. Let me go, you know. And so I think that's always hard for families. As religious as we may be, there's still an uncertainty. And people still feel that death is a final thing and you're going to be gone and we got to keep you here. And so I think that's kind of the struggle that people have. And when you put somebody on life support, like you say, you know, you're taking the choice from them. You know,
yes,
you're saying, I'm going to make you stay here even if you're ready to go.
Right, yes, yes.
So how do you help families with that if they have differing opinions? Say you maybe have a spouse that wants to keep them here. Maybe you have children that want to keep them. Or maybe you have somebody else that says, no, let them go. and families can't agree on what to do, and maybe that person didn't have a living will, so you got, you know, then the hospitals, they have to put you on life support because that's, you know, legally okay, they have to keep you alive.
Right.
Especially if you got insurance, they're going to make sure they keep you alive because they can keep getting paid. But but what do you do when families can't agree what to do and the person's only way they're being kept here is through life support?
Well, here comes that magic question. What do you think they would want? And you have to think, like, usually if there's I call it a family divide, what I usually do is I ask them from the platform, what do you, knowing the person that's laying in that bed, what do you think they would want? You're struggling, and I understand you're struggling to make a decision on this person's life. So who's holding whose life in whose hands?
Mm.
So you're standing here and you're making, while this person is waiting, literally waiting to transition, you're going back and forth in the indecisive moment in time, and you are literally putting yourself in a place of a higher power. Now, that may not be a smooth pill for somebody to swallow, okay, which is that they're like, wait a minute, what are you talking about? That's my loved one. I want them to be here. I'm doing what's best for them. Are you really doing what's best for them? The thing, if you know, again, that they were suffering prior to this, and they, at this point, their heart stopped. They did not have a DNR in place, but then one party wants to do it, the next party doesn't. Well, you got to have an even ground, and then the personalities, whatever, the opinion statements of the people, of the loved ones, at that point, they really don't matter. What matters is what that person would want, and that is the dignity, and that's the respect of that human being. So I always tell people, I say, this cannot be an emotional moment. I am so sorry. That's not an option. This cannot be a place where you bicker amongst each other.
I've seen that. I've seen it really get bad.
That energy,
yes.
Even if it's in the hospital, and you could be in the next room going back and forth, and the doctor's trying to figure out what you want to do, that energy disturbs the peace of that person. Energy travels. I think what people think that, you know that, like, they don't hear. The hearing ability of a person that is near death is the highest, way beyond our normal hearing.
Wow.
So you could be in the next room. They will pick up that energy. They will sometimes they even hear what is being said. So, and then I always tell the family, you imagine yourself laying in that bed. What would you want? Would you want to go on a breathing apparatus and stay on it for however long and still be, you know, forced to stay in this body when deep down inside you want it to end? So it becomes one of those issues right there. It becomes, and that's how I have to present it to them, because my main goal is to make that person's transition as comfortable, as what they call, as peaceful as possible. And I have to help the families understand that, you cannot make that decision based on your emotions, because that's what they're doing. They're in their emotions. They're not analyzing what is the right thing to do, what is the respectful thing to do. The integrity of this person laying here, that is the key point. That's the key point.
Yeah.
And
I really think that needs to be an unselfish thought, because, you know, like you say, what would they want? and not what do I want. I want them not to leave, yes, but what would they want in their last moments? How would they want to exit? Would they want to be hooked into, you know, IVs and tubes down the throat and, you know, forced heart beating and all? Would they want that? And is that living? Or would they want to be able to peacefully transition if that is their choice? So that's,
absolutely.
I think that's probably a difficult thing if you have people with differing points of view about life and death, particularly whether it's a religious or non-religious background or fears of heaven and hell or, you know, whatever it is that they believe happens afterwards. I think that's going to color how they choose to handle it or even choose to allow that person the dignity of a transition that is peaceful without being forcibly kept inside a body that's no longer working.
Yes, that's so true. And, you know, the hardest ones of all, Naima, is children.
Yes.
Children is, because that is different. I mean, if you have a loved one that's, you know, adult, you know, it's not any easier, but it gets very, very struggle with a child, you know.
But, you know, that's an interesting thought because people always assume that everyone comes here for the purpose of living a long life, and that's not everybody's purpose. We got to take a break, but when we come back, I'd like to explore that whole idea of a person living a short life, but it having its purpose in being short, so that people can not feel like you say, someone was taken from them. Oh, why did my, you know, 5-year-old have cancer and leave this world? Why is God so cruel? You know, maybe their purpose was to teach you something in that short period of time. But we'll talk about that when we come back after this break. We want to remind you all, of course, if you're listening online, you want to join this conversation, you can give us a call, 515-605-9325, and press 1 to let us know you have something to say. And if you are watching us live on Facebook, then you can write in your comments. We'll share them with our listening audience. And we'll be right back after this break, so stay with us.
Jody Susan of Susan Essentials is certified by the number one functional medicine doctor on plant-based healing essential oils, which are revolutionizing the way we manage our well-being. Schedule today to take control of your health.
Do you want to live in a world without war? Join our global peace movement. Heavenly Culture World Peace Restoration of Light transcends culture, religion, ideology, and other boundaries to achieve peaceful harmony in the global society. HWPL is committed to bringing world peace and cessation of war through peaceful dialogue between religious groups. I am Director Shin-Suk Kim of the HWPL Chicago Branch of North America. Join us for our next gathering. Call 773-580-1501 and be a part of the movement for world peace. Email us at chicagohwpl@gmail.com.
Have you ever dreamed of going to exotic places, meeting fascinating people, enjoying uplifting music, and spending nights in a luxurious hotel? Do you look forward to a relaxing vacation where you can walk along the beach or sit in a quiet park and enjoy the sunset or sunrise? Whether you're flying around the world or driving across the country, we will share travel tips that will help you stay safe while you enjoy the journey. Join me every third Saturday of the month, 12 noon to 2 p.m. Central Standard Time, and move around with Deborah here on the Female Solutions Show. Call in and comment 515-605-9325 and press 1 to speak.
Hi, I'm Naima Latif, executive producer of the Female Solutions Global Radio TV Show. We are a part of the online network of Associated Internet Radio Hosts, On Air. On Air empowers you with transformative news and interactive radio TV shows. This is such a wonderful time to be alive and to see our human family coming together as one community as a result of that powerful tool, the Internet. We can now talk directly to each other all over the world. There's no need for conflict or misunderstanding. There's no need for violence to solve our differences. We can talk to each other face to face until we reach an agreement. On Air offers a fantastic global guide to communicators from all over the world who are using their Internet platforms to inspire us to strive to be our best selves in order to become the kind, compassionate, loving people we were all born to be. Once we do that, we'll see planet Earth transformed into a place of peace. Subscribe to the recommended YouTube channels, Facebook pages, and podcasts created by these Voices of Enlightenment. On Air provides daily news briefs and a weekly magazine to keep you abreast of events and opportunities. On-air news affiliates in television, radio, and print share information, insight, and interviews with notable personalities. Go to onaireverywhere.com for a daily dose of uplifting news. We're on air everywhere, online all the time.
Topic. It really is when dealing with a person living a short life, and most people feel cheated, Naima. They feel cheated, especially when you hear these stories. Oh, they have so much going on for them at the time. Especially if it's a young adult, you know, like maybe 18, they had just graduated from high school, getting ready to go to college, and, you know, had all these aspirations, and this thing happened.
So how should families handle the feeling that God did them wrong, or you know, it wasn't fair, their loved ones should have been allowed to live a long life? How do you help families see it differently if someone's life was short but impactful and they touch people? How do you help families see it differently as opposed to being angry and feeling like someone was taken from them?
You know, it's funny that you asked that, and this topic is such a delicate topic because it deals with the emotional core of a human being. And I did a eulogy a few weeks ago for a 17-year-old young man that transitioned, and he was, it wasn't a terminal illness, so it was a sudden death, and it was his mother's only son, so it was a lot of dynamics in this. So to try to bring as much clarity to it as I can, when I gave the eulogy, I focused on the love that he gave to his family, because all of the rollback tape, as they played this video of him from the time he was born, and they played pictures and a little small snippets of videos that they had, you know, in their collections. And so I didn't want it to be extremely right.
Yeah.
Sad and mourning time, because all that would do is make the grief worse, actually.
Yeah.
You know? We don't have all the answers in a situation of the why. And, you know, we get angry with our higher power. We get angry.
Why did you take him?
We get angry. And the thing about it is, this person, well, the topic we were just talking about just a few minutes ago, was on life support for 1 week.
Wow.
Prior to transitioning.
And
it was...
Did they take him off, or did he just
pass away while on life? No, they took him off because the doctors at that point told them that there was no brain activity.
Oh, but he's already gone, so we're just keeping his body functioning, but he's not there.
So the mother at the time and the father had to make some vital decisions, and they hoped that he would have came back, but again, you know, there was not any chance of that. So again, I focused on the love. I took those pieces. I took those times of all the love that this human being gave his family at this short period of time. And I told him, I said, whenever you miss him, think about his smile. Whenever you miss him, think about the juvenile laughter that he brought to you. You know, you think about, you know, what would he want you to do? How would he want you to live if it was the other way around? You know, knowing this person, you know that they were always open-minded. They were always juvenile laughter. He had this thing about with his sisters. He would always, you know, play with them, you know, as the jokester, you know. And that's what, when they came up to give their last words, that's what one of the sisters used to say, that, you know, even when we were doing dishes or something or cleaning up the kitchen, he would always try to, do something to make me laugh. You know, it was always, he always thought about me and never about himself, because that's the kind of person he was. He just wanted to give love. He wanted to give peace. He wanted to give joy to his loved ones. And that's what we think. That's our takeaway.
Yeah.
That's our takeaway. What they left behind is, in this beautiful array of different situations. And, you know, the wonderful thing about the memory that we share, you know, we can roll tape at any time and just imagine that one time where, you know, they were right there in the midst of something and doing something, and you're like, wow, you know, This is so real. And I think, again, our Creator is so gentle with us. He gives us that opportunity to remember. Just imagine if you couldn't remember the good things.
Yeah.
Remember that if they were all gone and disappeared, like the physical person. Imagine, you know, all of the memories leaving as the physical person's transition, those memories leave with them. But the memory stayed with us. So, again, I have them to focus on the memories of the good, of the joy, instead of focusing on the memories of, you know, them being absent physically.
Yeah, I think that's something people need help with.
Yeah.
Because if you focus everything on their leaving, then you've missed the message of their presence. Why they were in the first place. I went to the funeral of a son of a childhood friend. You know, as a matter of fact, their family was very close to us. We grew up together, and again, an only son. But, and this was a couple of years ago, so it was before COVID, so, you know, the people were gathering together. And the church was packed. I think he was still in college, and he had gone on a trip overseas with a friend. He did a lot of traveling, and, you know, a sudden, I believe, a car accident or something. But the life that he led was so full, and he was just such an energetic person, touched so many lives. There was so much joy in the memories that he left, and I thought this was his purpose. He lived a full life. And the intention of it was not to be long, but the intention of it was to be impactful while he was here. And his transition was sudden, and it was, you know, of course, very distressing news for his parents and his aunts and uncles and everything and his friends. But as they recounted his life, you just saw how much he touched the lives of so many people. And the joy that he brought to so many people, his, you know, teachers talked about him, his friends, and just all kinds of people that were touched by this life, even though it ended early in terms of our standards. He was still in his early 20s, I think, but he touched so many people.
Yeah.
And I think that's our purpose for however long we're here, is to touch people, give love, and leave behind memories that people can recall and, you know, re-experience the joy. So I learned a lot from that funeral. I know this sounds morbid, but I kind of like going to funerals because it helps remind me that I'm here for a purpose, and how I live is more important than how I leave. So I have to I have to live in such a way that what I leave behind is everlasting. But I love to hear the celebrations of people's lives and even observe those who may not have lived as well as they could have and may not have treated people as well as they could have. Because, you know, when people give the eulogy, they always tell your best side. They always, you know, say the good things, and sometimes they say things that weren't really quite true if they can't find some good things. But even there's a lesson in that. You know, you don't want the person giving your eulogy have to make up some good stuff because you didn't have any. You always want to give them some things to work, you know, to be able to say that touch people's heart, because they say, yeah, that's how they were. Yeah, I remember that. Oh, that's so beautiful. You want to have touched lives. So what I've been learning is that it doesn't matter how much stuff you accumulated. That's the last thing that's important. All of that is just things to be distributed among people after you're gone. But if you spend your time focusing on the things you acquire, then you miss the reason for being here. And you will not be remembered for all the things you had, because nobody cares about that. So if you focus on how you touch people's lives and the way you treat them every day, that's the wealthiest you can ever be. The memories that you leave, that is your wealth. And that's the message I keep getting from going to various funerals. I've been to funerals with people who didn't have much materially, but they touched so many people in so many ways. Even if it was little things like, oh, she always sent me a card for my birthday, or, you know, always got a call, or they came by the hospital, or, you know, they watched my children. You know, just all the little acts of kindness that you did, but those are the things people remember. Nobody gets up and when they give their 2-minute remarks about you or whatever, nobody says, oh, yeah, they had that new car. They really spent a lot of money on their jewelry. I mean, nobody remembers those things. Those don't matter. But it's the things you did that touched them. So that's So even if it's a short life, when I see that someone hasn't had an impact, the love they share, their friends, that you know how they even may have demonstrated forgiveness for somebody who might have, you know, done something to them that wasn't kind, and but yet they still were able to demonstrate some spiritual principle in the short period of time they had. I think that's what touches lives. So there's a reason for every life, even if it's short. And
that's right.
So how do you help people see those things when something seems like a tragedy? Because a lot of things happen to young people today.
Yes.
How do you help families see the good or learn the lesson from that life, even if it ended in a way that was hurtful, unexpected, painful? How do families still get something from it where they can feel joy?
Well, again, they go through their grieving process, and usually, again, if it's sudden death, anger is the first thing that lingers. Anger is you, before you can really embrace all the things that you once even knew about that person, you feel the sense of the loss, like something or someone has stolen something from you, and they took something from you. So you feel violated. You'll go through those emotions of violation, and which brings on, you know, a lot of discord and confusion, things of that nature. You don't look for the peace at first. So that's usually a first thing that they, you know, that's the first emotion that is experienced. And then as the secondary grief stage comes on, which is the first stage of grief, is the primary stage where it just happened. It's fresh, you know, and as time then takes it, because time is going to take it, whether you want it or not. As soon as it happens, 5 minutes later, 10 minutes later, 2 days, 5 weeks, years, time has took it. It's nothing you can do. Then it's really out of your power. So a lot of people still feel that anger.
Mm.
They still feel cheated. They still feel that their voice was taken from them, that they are not able to say to that person their goodbyes, even if it was a sudden death. You know, so it's so many dynamics with that before they can really see the peace of it all. And it takes time. Sometimes it's a long-driven, grief-stricken type of thing. And then it's the guilt. The guilt of, I should have done something. I should have said something. Maybe if I had said something, they would have never went there, and that would have never happened. They wouldn't have went, you know. There's so many different dynamics with that, Naima. It's hard. Again, sudden death is the hardest thing to get over until a person really comes to a perspective that years has passed and I'm still angry.
Mm. So how do you help people deal with it when they're angry at God? You know, feeling like, why would God do this to me? And I've seen people who may have grown up religious suddenly kind of renounce their religion because someone died and they felt God was unfair and they just couldn't be comforted. Their anger, I mean, that's got to be the most difficult stage of the grief. But angry at God, that's at the core of your being where you feel like you were betrayed by the Creator. How do you help people through that stage of anger in their grief?
Well, what I often say, I say, well, he's big enough to deal with your anger. So and it's okay. It's all right because, you know, being angry is a choice. It's a normal emotion that we go through. And we often look at God when things are taken from us because we feel and think that he is totally in control of all things. Question, but is he really?
Mm.
Is he really? The thing about it is, man was given free will. And that being said, everything on situation, circumstances, which is the four occurrence of any given choice, of any given state of time, you know, and this is just from my learning, and I know some people may not agree with this, and I understand, and I respect you. I believe that when there's a occurrence in the earth, not always interrupted, which is there's time is the one that's always in control. God put time here to control everything. Think about it. The time you wake up, the time you go to sleep. What you do in that a period of time is your choices. What you do in that period of time is your choices. So let's just say, let me give you an example. A person just, you know, getting up in like any normal day, going to work, and there's a drunk driver. That person got up just like them, but chose other things. They chose to be intoxicated to the point to where it made them not what they call legally able, as far as their alcohol consumption, to drive. So that person's choice collided with this person's life. Now, we know God is omnipresent, omnipotent, all-present, right?
Right.
So what most people think, oh, that happened, and you know, it shouldn't have happened. Why did God take my loved one? I don't understand. That person's choice collided in time with that. Everything is frequency in time. And the thing about it is, it doesn't matter whether somebody killed somebody by somebody else's hands. It doesn't matter whether they collided in, like you said, in road rage. I mean, it's all, people make choices 24/7. They make over 50,000 choices per day. And Naima, some of those choices are not healthy. Some of those choices are self-destructive. And that's what we see today. We see all the choices of the self-destruction. That's what we see.
So how do people keep from living in a state of paranoia that something's going to happen to them? That's kind of like that's the energy that we're experiencing right now. Everybody fearing some unseen thing is going to attack them and take their lives or take the lives of their loved ones. So there's this paranoia about possible death, and it has distorted our thinking in such a way that we're not enjoying life to the quality that we could. And has really brought to the surface our culture and our beliefs about death, so that, and this is perhaps the benefit of these times for us to look at what we believe about life and eternity and the other side after we transition. What do we really believe? Because we are so obsessed with losing our lives that we are doing things that make life very unpleasant. So what's the purpose of being here if you're afraid to even breathe? I mean, it's that outrageous. We got to take another break, but when we come back, I'd like to take a look at what would be a healthier way to look at these times, this challenge of the coronavirus, the reality of people who have chosen to transition at this time, whether it's as a result of the virus or just simply they're ready to leave. How do we look at it in a healthier way so that we can accept the reality of those who have transitioned and we can continue to live without being obsessed about death? So We'll be right back. And if you're listening online and want to join this conversation, give us a call, 515-605-9325. Press 1. When you have something to say, we'll open your mic. You're listening to and watching the Female Solution Global Radio TV Show. And today we have Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green. And we're looking at handling news of a terminal illness. How do we handle when we know we're about to transition or someone we love is scheduled to go? We'll be right back. Stay with us.
We all say we would like to be wealthy, but wealth isn't determined by how much money you have. Wealth is determined by your power to define what money is. The dictionary defines money as something used as a way to pay for goods and services and to pay people for their work. So how would you like to have access to an unlimited source of money? Money that is not taxed by the government. Money that increases as you share the opportunity with others. Money that you can use to pay for goods and services and pay people for their work. I'm talking about Bitcoin. It's the future of independent wealth building. Bitcoin is the new money that you control. Get started building your wealth. Call 312-849-3456. That's 312-849-3456.
Hey, it's time to take charge of your health. I'm Viata, your holistic life coach, and every Friday morning at 8 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time, I'm here on The Female Solution to empower you to make choices that will assist your evolution to abundant health. I'm also blogging every Sunday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time at Soul Purpose Healing, where I bring you a spiritual chiropractic adjustment to bring you back into alignment with our Creator's love, compassion, and wisdom. Join me every Friday morning at 8 a.m. and Sunday evening at 8 p.m. for a time of unity, enlightenment, and love vibration. Shalom.
We have an opportunity to transform the whole global society in the next 50 years. 50 years from now, the earth will be populated by a new generation of adults, many of whom are yet unborn. Our mission is to nurture them in childhood with love, guidance, and protection, and to raise them in healthy, happy families. If we impart values of compassion, generosity, and respect for fellow human beings in the next generation of children, they will create a world where people can live together in peace. This is our goal. Be a part of the transformation. Get your copy of the book, The Female Solution. Go to www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com.
Doctor's info as a final word to exit. The news should inspire you to change your lifestyle, talk to your creator, and listen for the voice of life. Okay, so, and that's one thing, you know, doctors will say, well, you got 6 months to live, you know, you got 5 months to live, you have... What are your thoughts about that? Because That's almost like childbirth, you know, saying, okay, you're going to have your baby on this day, and if it doesn't happen, then you feel like, oh, they're late, oh, what do we do? You know, same thing. Someone says, well, you're going to die at this date. Then you just say, oh, well, let me just pack up and prepare to go. Because I had a friend who she was told that, and just like Viata said, she changed her lifestyle because she had cancer in her family, and everybody in her mother died from it, her sister died from it. When she was diagnosed, she totally changed her eating habits, went totally vegan, got rid of, you know, all the toxic things that we normally eat. And she was around for an additional, I think, 10 or 15 years beyond what they said she was going to be here. So she did reverse things. And I don't know, do you think that's sometimes a way to look at what doctors tell you is a terminal illness? You're like, well, no, maybe I can change my life path, or maybe I can, you know, create an alternative timeline. Maybe I was possibly scheduled to leave here if I continue to do this way, but maybe if I change something, I can actually change that outcome. What do you think about that response that Viata's suggesting?
Absolutely. If I can just give an example, you have two people that were given a terminal illness, but one knew and one didn't. Okay? So the one that knew, like you said, they accepted it. Whatever we accept, and we give life to that. So the one that didn't know, but even though they were still terminal, you know, they then looked at it with a positive state of mind. Okay? So remember, one accepted the death and one did not. The one with the positive mind said, okay, that's what you see there, but I am going to feel and think something different about what I'm going through. So, again, and they start making changes, lifestyle changes, like you said, to kind of give this wonderful opportunity, okay, to refine themselves, not looking at the worst part of life. Like, okay, let me be prepared to die. Let me give away all my things. Let me go ahead and write my will. Because either you're going to get busy living or get busy dying, one or two. So, I mean, then every day that you live your best day. You know what I'm saying? You live it like Ray Charles used to say, you know, you live every day like it's your last, because one day it will be. And that's for everybody.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just for a person that was given a terminal illness. It's for every living soul that walks this earth. So we want to leave something behind. I often tell people, look into your gifts and leave something behind. Everyone is gifted. So leave a book, you know, leave a song. Leave something and not focus on this thing called death. You know, it's what they call inspired, not inspired, but expiration date. You know, inspire instead of expire.
I like that. Inspire instead of expire. Woo! Yeah. Now that's a bumper sticker. Yeah.
That's a bumper sticker. Yes. And you know, and when we think that every day, you know, we think that no matter what comes, what may, you know, we live life intentional. See, now it's intentional. It's not just living life just on your everyday, you know, whatever it is, or get up in the morning, do this, do that. No, what is a life of intentions? You know, as I tell my patients, I tell them, I said, choose a word that you want to think and feel. Choose a statement you want to think and feel. So when you open your eyes, what is, oh, I want to be peaceful today. Okay, my word is peace. And let that peace be a reminder. Think about all of the peaceful things that you have in your life throughout your day. Even if something happens in your day that may look like the peace is jeopardized, but always remember, I chose peace. So I will not be moved by this thing. So it makes life worth living, especially whether a person has a terminal illness or not. You know, I think that what happens is we take this for granted. That's why I said the breath of life. We take it for granted. We don't put the emphasis on it as it should be. And when we are given, or any one of our loved ones are given a death notice, oh, now everything changes. But guess what? It should have been intentional before.
Yeah.
Anything can change in our life.
Yeah.
That will make things seem like it's closing in. And it doesn't matter what it is. Some people can die mentally. Some people can die emotionally.
Mm.
Some people can die spiritually. Not just physical death is the last point of death.
So, you know, one thing that I observe that's happening as a result of people fearing death. A lot of seniors, some of them, you know, everybody says, okay, well, they are most vulnerable to catching an illness, so we want to make sure they stay safe. So now what we're seeing in a lot of nursing homes is isolation. And with isolation comes sadness and depression. If you're not getting social interaction, no one can touch you physically, you can't get a hug, you can't get visitation, you know, it's like your life has ended even though you're still up and breathing, but the things that bring you joy have been taken away. So how is that living? And I'm seeing, you know, the decline of people who have been left in solitude supposedly for their safety so they can be safe from illness, but then the quality of life is so low, it's like you're the living dead. You have nothing that would bring you the excitement and the joy of life because there's no human interaction. And that's what we have created in this fear-based culture that's evolving. How do we reverse this trend and help people choose to live? And not, you know, so much being reckless over, okay, you're spreading a contagious virus or whatever the case may be, but choosing to live and enjoy life as opposed to being afraid to live and literally terminating your life before it's over. How do we change what has happened as a result of this fear?
Well, we have to go back to the love. You know, love overcomes a multitude of sin, as the Bible text tells us, but it also heals. And I think in during this time right here, our social contact is minimized and has been minimized for a while now, you know. So some people are very, you know, they need that touch. They need that reassurance that that person cares. And if you notice that when we put the mask on, all we see is the eyes.
Yeah.
Now, the eyes is the windows of the soul, and it can tell a whole lot, you know. But then it's, we don't see smiles anymore.
Yeah, no smiles.
No smiles, and smiles is the one that gives you that warm feeling. So all we see is eyes. It's like everybody's just looking.
Yeah.
Everybody's looking, and you don't know what's behind the mask.
Yeah.
So some of these people, they like to they want to hide behind the mask because they've been having a mask all the time. So this is just an extra mask over them.
Makes it easier to hide.
They had to put a mask on
and, you know, fix their face so you couldn't see their emotions. Now they just cover.
Now, yes. So, and that's, you know, it makes it difficult for those people who are people. Like, wow, you know, like when we have patients that come to the hospital, we often tell them to pull it down and put it back up. You said, let me see your face.
Mm.
Okay, put it back on.
Mm.
because it gives us that opportunity just for that brief moment in time, just to say, you know, oh, it's okay. Because, when, again, this has changed life as we know it. So we look at a part of the death timing that's happened to us, how we are dealing with this terminal death. And the thing about it is, think about it. As this pandemic is lingering and going on and changing and transforming, still taking lives, we're all dealing with a terminal death.
Life is terminal. It always has been.
Of course. But it's not, you know, again, we cannot let the fear of it all take away from the essence of life, you know.
So is this a time to start teaching differently? Now that we have globally had to face our fear of death, is this a time maybe to correct some of the mistaken belief systems, everything from fear of hell and damnation and punishment to belief that nothing happens and once you leave this body, that's it, you cease to exist? I mean, is it time now to correct some mistaken thoughts that have kept us in this state of fear of death? Because we are having to face a reality that there are many transitions happening, and we must see it differently if we're going to raise a generation of healthy children that are not obsessed with dying to the point where they can't form social bonds. And they can't experience joy because everything is fear. So now, is this an opportunity for us to maybe dismantle some of those old belief systems that don't allow us to truly understand the reality of our eternal beingness?
I think so. I think one should be educated and also educate the children on this, you know, new wave of life. I call it the new normal, you know, of everything, and let them talk about what they feel, like going back to school and being around, you know, and hearing that some person was, that just got, you know, diagnosed with the COVID-19 that might have been sitting 2 rows away from them. And I mean, it's, that alone makes children, anybody really uncomfortable. But you also have to remember your time of death is different than anybody else's.
Right.
That's why we have this thing right here. It's called a fingerprint.
Mm.
The fingerprint is our DNA,
yeah.
And it's our DNA as an individual, despite family orientation, any of those. So just because you may see it with someone else, that doesn't mean it's yours.
Mm.
It doesn't mean that I don't care if they were sitting right next to you. That does not mean that, oh, you're going to, you know, die because someone else has passed away or died right next to you. No, it doesn't mean that. What it means is that that's their time.
Mm.
You're on your own timing. It's a time and season for all things. It's like it's a time and season for babies to be born. There's a time for people to transition. We came out of nothingness. We were not even seen with the naked eye in our mother's womb. So we have to go back to the invisible. The flesh cannot go where the spirit can. So, and I don't want this to be, you know, I want everyone to understand that death is not this horrid thing. What makes it horrid is the emotional bond that you have with it. If you analyze it, it will be much easier for you to deal with than to just feel it. Because you feel, especially losing loved ones, terminal illnesses, the pandemic, all of these things, just rest and live your best life. And I want to offer a book. It's an old book, and it's actually It's called Embraced by the Light. Embraced by the Light by Betty Jean Eadie. E-A-D-D-I-E.
Mm. Yeah.
Very old book.
Yeah.
But it is one of the most profound, very descriptive, specific, near-death activations. That's all I can call it, the activations. It's not anything else, and it inspires. So if you are, you know, in a area of your life that it looks like it's ending, or someone else's life, it looks like it's ending. Notice I say it looks like, because we don't know the time of death.
Right.
Doctors can give you all the notices they want, but they can't tell you exactly what time.
Right. They really don't know. And
be inspired by that.
That would be a wonderful book. One thing I'm hoping to do is have a number of guests, particularly on your show, because this is really a time for learning. But there are so many people who have had near-death experiences and have written books. And, you know, people always say, well, you don't know what happens after death. Nobody ever came back to tell us. Well, yeah, they have. A whole lot of people. A whole mm-hmm. lot of people. So it's time for us to hear them and not dismiss it as, oh, well, they were hallucinating. Oh, you know. No, this is real. We are being given an opportunity to remember our eternal life and the fact that this physical experience is temporary for our learning, the expansion of our soul, the growth of our understanding and wisdom, but it's temporary. The life is what we had before and what we're returning to. And so this is such a wonderful time to be alive, because there's so many people, whether it's because modern medicine can resuscitate you or people are feeling more comfortable to talk about it, because I'm sure people had near-death experiences in the past and just maybe various religious beliefs wouldn't allow them to speak about it because it wasn't understood. But now is the time, I believe, for us to really be able to tell people, okay, this is what's going to happen when you go back home, when you transition. You're going to have a life review. You're going to see where you may have made some mistakes. You're going to be able to analyze, you know, what happened. You're going to have a clarity of understanding as to how you impacted people. That's what's going to happen when you leave. And so knowing that this is going to happen, what you want to do is self-correct right now so that you don't have a regret that you didn't understand these things and maybe you unknowingly hurt people. I mean, I think if people could live life preparing for that eventuality, not fearing, you know, hell, damnation, eternal burning in a lake of fire and all these things that do not happen when you transition. But if we can understand, you're going to get that video of your life and you're going to be able to see it from other points of view so that you can understand how you impacted people's lives. That's what happens when you leave.
Yes.
If people can be taught that instead of, well, we don't know what happened. Yeah, we do know. This is what happens. People have come back to tell us exactly what happened. Then maybe if we can teach this, then people will choose to live their lives differently, understanding that the judgment is not some angry God, but it's your own judgment. You're going to judge what you did. You're going to see what you did. You're going to feel how you made people feel. So knowing this, you want to be your best self, because mm-hmm. you don't want to regret that you were less than your best self and were less than kind to people. You don't want to feel that regret. So live your life, as you said, as if it's your last day. One day it will be, and you're going to see the video of what you did. So you want to be able to watch it with joy. That's the whole point. But there is no angry God waiting to give you pain when you leave here. Because I think that's the biggest thing, people fearing the transition from this life, they're fearing of what's going to happen afterwards, and they're believing that they're going to cease to exist instead of understanding that you are eternal consciousness.
Mm.
So Is there a way we can teach these things without people feeling like they must toss their religion in the garbage or, you know, I mean, is there a way to modify an understanding, whatever spiritual path you're following, modify the understanding so that it's not based in fear of death and fear of God, but an understanding that we are an expression of God, having this temporary experience for the purpose of the elevation of our souls, and we're basically just here to learn how to love. And
fine,
when we leave here, we're going to see how well we did. That's it.
Right. Yes, it's the topic of that is so permeated by what we learned before. You know, in other words, as we grew up, you know, what our mothers and fathers thought, or what, you know, our grandmothers said, or what people in, like you say, in the church say, and there's so many different factors that influence that thought, you know, and we get confused because whatever you're going to believe, you're going to believe, and whatever you're going to believe, you're going to live.
Mm.
So if you believe that you have no life force, that you go back to be nothing and, like, go poof, okay. If that's what you believe, you know, you wouldn't find out until you transition, of course, you know. But if that's what you believe, that's what you believe. However, if you believe you have an eternal life, eternal is ongoing.
Mm-hmm.
You may not be attached to this physical body forever, but the consciousness, the awareness, the consciousness is not linked to pain. Let me explain something really quick. The consciousness is not linked to physical pain. The physical pain is in the body. The body has nerve endings. The body has all of these circuitries and things of that nature. But the consciousness, the soul force, does not feel pain of that magnitude. It does not.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's what people think, that, you know, the damnation,
yeah,
of it all, if I don't do what's right, if I don't live right, or whatever living right is, if I don't make the right choices, if I don't do this, if I don't do that, then, you know, I'm going to, like you said, God's going to throw me away. He's not going to want anything to do with me. He's going to keep. We serve a loving God. It's the agape. The agape is the love of God. He will not put you in a place of unrest. Now, you can put yourself there. Some people have hell on earth.
Yes, they're living hell. Okay. They're creating hell.
Right here.
Yeah.
Right here. All I'm saying is you have these different types of terminal illness. We go back to that. A terminal illness is not just a physical death. It's also a spiritual death, which a person thinks, I can't live anymore. I'm self-defeated.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not loved. You know, I self-sabotage. I always beat myself up. I block everything else around me. You know, I'm going to self-destruction.
Mm.
Self-destruction is a suicidal mindset of I'm literally destroying myself for whatever reasons thereof. Some people think, oh, it's, you know, I'm destroying myself because I don't want any more pain, thinking I have to take myself physically off this earth. Okay, what's the difference between that and a terminal illness? There isn't any.
Wow.
Because you choose to terminate yourself, and I was just led to go there right now. I don't know who's out there feeling something.
Mm.
I don't know who's out there that's dealing with suicide. Let me tell you what suicide ideation is. Suicide ideation is when there is a thought pattern that's been there for a period of time.
Wow.
And that thought pattern goes and it evolves. It keeps happening. Sometimes it goes, sometimes it comes. Sometimes there's a trigger. A trigger is anything that disappoints you and you're no longer in control, and then you go right back to that thought process.
Mm.
Sometimes it's pain from your past that you don't want to keep living or keep thinking about, then you go right back to that thought process.
Mm.
And what it's asking you people, it's not telling you to physically remove yourself. It's asking, what do you want to do with it? What do you want to do with the pain? What do you want to do with the past? Which means make a choice to either live in your here and now.
Or keep reliving the past.
Or keep reliving your pain, wherever your pain is.
Mm.
If it's pain in the past, if it's pain in the future that you think is going to happen, uncertainty, you know, is it pain here and now.
Mm.
But self-destruction is only asking you to change.
Wow.
Change the way you
change
live your life.
Change
your perception of life. Change your views.
Absolutely.
Change your habits. Change your behavior.
Mm.
Change.
That's
what it's asking.
That's what it's
and
asking.
Sometimes the mind will do that.
Yeah.
It will cause us to shut down enough so that we can think.
Mm.
That's what it's for.
That's what
not
it's
feel. Think.
Yeah. Well, we got some calls on the line. We got to take our last break. Area code 407. We're coming to you next. Hold on. We'll be right back with Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green. We'll be back in a moment. Stay with us.
I'm Naima Latif with your on-air daily news brief for Thursday, August 12, 2021. In a congressional briefing in Washington, D.C. yesterday, August 11, the Indian American Muslim Council and several other human rights organizations hosted a panel of several esteemed activists and lawyers who raised awareness on the growing number of prisoners of conscience in India under Prime Minister Narendra Modi's regime. Included on this panel were Brenda Grover, a senior advocate in the Supreme Court of India, researcher and human rights activist, Dr. Waris Hussain, a human rights attorney and adjunct professor at the Howard University School of Law, Suchitra Vijayan, executive director of the Polis Project, and Rashmi Singh, an advocate and lawyer practicing primarily in the Supreme Court of India. Amnesty International defines a prisoner of conscience as someone who has not used or advocated violence or hatred, but is imprisoned because of who they are or what they believe, religious, political, or other conscientiously held beliefs. The White House Partnerships Office announced that Shannon Weissman will serve as the Biden-Harris administration's liaison to the Jewish community. Shannon brings a wealth of experience, including his previous service in this role during the Obama-Biden administration. Shannon's official first day will be Monday, August 16th. Shannon Weissman currently serves as the Director of Technology and Democracy on the staff of the National Security Council and is on detail from the Department of State, where he served as Section Chief for the Internet Freedom and Business and Human Rights Team in the Bureau of Democracy, Human Rights, and Labor, DRL. Cook County Animal and Rabies Control urges pet owners to take special precautions to protect the health and welfare of their pets during the heat advisory over the coming days. The department offers tips for pet owners to keep in mind. Do not leave your pet in a hot car. Even with the windows rolled down, studies have shown that the temperature inside the car can increase 15 degrees above the outside temperature. Keep your pets cool when outside. All dogs should be provided with cool water and shade and monitored when outside. Take care of your dog's paws. Remember that asphalt and sidewalks are hotter than grass, and dogs' paw pads are highly sensitive to heat. Keep inside temperatures cool. Make sure your indoor pets have water and are comfortable when in the home. Signs of heat stroke include fatigue, excessive panting, disorientation, lethargy, discomfort, seizures, and collapse. If your pet is experiencing any of these symptoms, seek veterinary help immediately. If you see an animal in distress,
call your local police department for assistance. This year, the Black Enterprise Entrepreneur Summit will take place from Wednesday, September 15th through Thursday, September 16th as a virtual experience that will provide you with the resources and tools you need to network, thrive, and take your business to new heights. To register, go to blackenterprise.com. I'm Naima Latif with your on-air daily news brief. On Air, the online network of Associated Internet Radio hosts, empowering you with transformative news and interactive radio TV shows. Go to onaireverywhere.com.
And we are back. You are listening to and watching the Female Solution Global Radio TV show. And you are enjoying a conversation, Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green. Well, we've been taking a look at handling news of a terminal illness, handling the sudden expiration of someone, handling someone who leaves here even though they are a young person, and even how to handle someone who is thinking of taking their own life.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we go through these various stages. Well, let's go to our phone line and area 407701, Grand Rising. I believe this is Rita.
Grand Rising Sisters, sorry I couldn't join you on the stream there, but I've been on the beach this morning. I didn't have enough power left in my phone after filming sunrises and waves. But welcome, Dr. Debbie. I'm the author of the Friday morning health and well-being host. I'm so happy to hear your voice and to know that you're going to be joining this awesome Female Solution family, because we are awesome.
Thank you.
As a team.
Thank
so,
you so
and I was just enjoying what when I did. My phone's dying, but when I was enjoying, I was listening to your wisdom about death and that. You reminded me of my hospice nurse friend, and I kind of see you as a spiritual hospice nurse, because she shared a lot of wisdom, as you have shared today, about being in the presence of people whose souls left their body, and I was just in awe about her experience. And I befriended her because she was my sister's hospice nurse when my sister was dying of breast cancer. But actually, my hospice nurse friend has shared with me, and what I've learned, is that my sister was really dying from grief and unforgiveness and guilt over the death of her only child. So I really came to understand death as I sat with someone who had passed away and I knew her history. So I'm wondering if you see yourself often as a hospice, spiritual hospice nurse, and do you get a chance to really tune into the emotions of people who are ready to leave their bodies?
Actually, I do. Yes. And I am a certified end-of-life specialist. I don't know if you ever heard of a death doula. Because
yes, I have.
Yes, absolutely. So in those last 30 to 45 days, Sister V, those last 30 to 45 days, a person goes through so many different types of feelings. You know, they actually, they roll back tape, they go back into time, and all the feelings that they might have had as a child, as a young adult, they do what they call a Rolodex of feelings. They go back and they look back at the times that they might have had regrets, even unfinished business, looking at who they forgave, who they didn't forgive. And they are, you know, you can really see if you're there with that person, even though, again, it's a lot of times they may stop speaking. And that's one of the signs when death is very close, when that person slowly but surely starts using the audible voice. So we go back to telepathy. We go back to telepathy, which is the originator of the mind conscious and soul force. Then literally, if those individuals in that room are coming to visit, if they're able to have a clarity, because you got to have a real clear mind and a clear spirit to pick up what they're feeling. If not, if they're kind of cloudy with a lot of things, they won't be able to pick it up. But I am. So I will be able to relay, you know, to the family, he or she is feeling this, and they're saying that. And you know, and one thing, if their eyes are open, they move their eyes in a way. Usually where I can read the eyes and expression that let me know exactly what they're saying and what they want to relay. And I pick it up telepathy. I've done this many times. I've done this either with my mother and my sister that passed on over the years. And that energy is, we know it as emotion, okay? Because we're still in a physical body and we can feel the emotion. But it's energy with them. They project the energy of it. And you get the opportunity to put it in words, you know? As you feel that energy, you're the advocate, like you're the advocate of that person. And you let them know he or she is feeling whatever. She wants to let you know that she loves you, that she understands this is a difficult time. And so I even had, they asked me, ask my loved one if I can leave. You know, ask them if I can go. You know, I'm ready to leave. I'm ready to go. So ask them, because they're not talking about it. They're not talking. They're not giving me the permission. And I think what people think that, you know, if you don't verbally, you know, they don't verbally tell someone, very seldom, you know, because it's really an unselfish act to you tell a person that you love, you know, it's all right,
it's
for
okay
you
to leave.
Be inspired.
Yes.
It's all right for you to transition. I will be okay. That right there.
Yes, they need to know. You'll be
they
okay.
Need to know. They My mother, at the last point of breath, she was struggling. I saw her struggling, you know, and I told her, Mom, I put my hand gently on her, and I said, and I leaned in, and I said, go home. I will be okay. I've learned. You taught me how to live. I keep you here.
Awesome. Mm. Yeah. I hope you have a book in the. I hope you have a book going or
it's coming.
You book oh, good. Yeah, because I'm a birth doula, and
Mexico.
I've experienced all of that. Is very. It's a little different when the baby's coming out of the hole, but it's an awesome experience we're having. And tomorrow, I just want to invite everyone listening. Tomorrow, I have a special guest doctor who's a holistic physician. And we're going to dive into Lyme disease. Why is Lyme disease doubled in the last 10, 15 years? So hope you'll join me tomorrow morning at 7 with Health and Wellbeing with Viata. And thank you so much, Dr. Debbie, for sharing your awesome journey.
Yes.
Thank you so
Viata. We appreciate you. And we'll be there tomorrow to hear all about it.
Joint
Wellbeing.
Don't forget, Joint
Health
Rolling
and Wellbeing. Wholesome. And...
I know. I love it. I need to roll some joints
now.
All right. Yes. Well, Zelda has, Shalom. We'll see you in the morning. So Zelda has chimed in here on Facebook. She says, Grand Rising, beautiful queen, sisters. So many people are feeling this way and ashamed. Powerful information, recommendations. You know, yes, people feeling... They can't talk about it. They're feeling all the emotions that come with fear, and they feel ashamed to talk about what they're going through. How do we help people open up about? Because I mean, that's a big taboo. People won't talk about it, so they won't plan for it, and they won't acknowledge it when it's happening. And then as it's happening, as it, many people have experienced, they make the person who really is ready to transition feel like that they can't leave. So how do we help people talk about it in this culture?
Well, again, you know, tradition tells us that it is definitely a taboo, like you said. You know, it's a hush thing. You know, it's like mental illness. Don't talk about that.
Yeah,
you know?
It's all around. We won't talk about it. Yeah,
don't talk about that. You know, but it's inevitable. You know, so how do we do that? That's, you know, we bring those subjects up. When there is a time of reference, when people, everybody, again, has handled grief in some aspect. So, you know, what do you do when something's leaving you? You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it could be a physical person leaving you, and that person could still be alive and they're leaving. You're still going to go through a grief pattern.
Right, right.
You know what I'm saying? You can have lost a dog. You're still going to go through a grief pattern.
Yes.
You could lose your job. You could still go through the grief pattern.
Yes.
So loss is inevitable. And, you know, and we talk about it more than what we realize. Oh, I lost my keys the other day. I lost my phone.
Yeah.
So we lose time.
Yes.
So we really talk about it more, Naima, than what we think. It's just that when we... The part of losing a human being or ourselves, leaving this earth completely, that is when it gets, again, difficult because the mind and the consciousness is not ready for that loss.
It's not
ready for that loss at all. But, again, we can't be selfish.
Yeah. We gotta make ourselves ready and be comfortable with whatever, whenever it happens. Now, Zelda says the bod, and the bod is really an interesting apparatus. She said it's really helping heal my past issues.
Things and check it out.
Yeah. She said working on herself is more powerful than working extra time on a job. It gives you what you need for personal development. That's right.
That's true.
If we can work on ourselves, that's really the key to everything. And she says that terminal illness, voluntary, involuntary, is a wake-up call. Well, I would say that, yes, if you are being told, you know, that you're on the way out of here, you start evaluating your life.
Yes.
It says, hi, Dr. Debbie, welcome to the Female Solution. You're a powerful asset to the team and global community. Absolutely.
Yes.
Yes. She is an asset to the global community. Looking forward to some joint rolling on the health and well-being with Viana tomorrow morning. Yes.
Joy rolling.
And our Tuesday host is Jody.
Grand
Rising. Yes. So, yeah, we have a fantastic team here, and
all of
us are here doing what our soul intended for us to do, and that is to touch the world and raise the consciousness to help bring awareness and understanding of our grand purpose for this temporary physical earth experience.
Yes.
And it's a joyful time to be alive and to touch lives and to help people appreciate life. And part of understanding it is knowing that we didn't come here to stay. We're going to go back home. And where is home? Home is where you are loved. So if you're going back to where you're loved, how is that sad?
Right.
That's why I love when I go to places where they call it a homegoing, you know, homegoing celebration. That's, I think, if we can start using that language when someone leaves, we're going to their homegoing celebration.
That's right.
And that's going to be joy. We're going to look at all the wonderful things they taught us in the life they lived, however long or short it was, and we're going to celebrate them having this time with us to share themselves and teach us something else about life.
Yeah.
I think we look at it that way, then there's
It's not all bad.
Yeah, we're going to miss you, you know, being physically present, but we know that your essence is everlasting. And we might even learn how to tune into you where you are.
Right.
Which helps us to understand that you really never left.
That's right.
You're always here.
Yes. I would like to add just one thing.
Yes.
Regardless of what you've lost, and we okay, I'm back to the losing of a loved one.
Mm.
The bloodline lives on.
Yeah.
Please understand, every one person is a generation. That generation produces descendants. So you are with a generation. And if that person, whether they're 1 year old to 100, leaves, you are the next bloodline.
Yes.
Live for your bloodline. Live for your loved ones. Live your best life for them. Because the blood is still there. The essence of the soul link, soul force is still there. You are the one. They pass the baton to you.
Mm.
You have to run with it.
I love that analogy because I used to run, track and run relays. So, yeah,
you
definitely. That resonates with me greatly, yes.
So
they pass
you don't
the
have
baton,
time.
You gotta take it and run, yeah.
You don't have time to die mentally. You don't have time
right.
to die emotionally. You don't have time to die. That's not an option for
right.
you.
And you know
because
when you're taking...
You're reliving.
Right.
You're living your best life
right.
for them. They want you to thrive. They want you
yes.
to be happy. They don't want you leaned over in the corner somewhere or crawled up in the bed in a fetal position. They want
they
you
want
to
you
live.
To thrive. Yes.
And not die.
That yes.
Because their essence is right there near you.
Right.
And if you sit still... enough, and you focus, and you do just stay in a peaceful, you'll be surprised what you'll feel. Haven't you experienced, if your loved one passed on, like a mother or father, you would say, wow, I do this just like my mother.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Well, that's her essence.
Her essence.
I do this just like my father.
Yes.
That's your father's essence.
Yes. Yes.
You know what I'm saying? And I mean, and there's so much that we have to live for, even if it's the death of a young child. What would that child want? If that child would want you to be happy.
They want you to be happy. They want you to feel joy. They want you to look forward. Just like you say
everything.
About passing the baton. When that person passes the baton, they don't want you to keep looking back. They want you to look forward and run. They want you to go as fast as you can forward. They don't want you to keep looking back. The whole point is for you to take it and go forward and do your best. That's what people want. And don't feel guilty if you're have joy. It's like, oh well, I should be in mourning. I should be no. They want you to feel joy. So we've got another call on the line. I believe we've got Mama AZ at area code 336, Grand Rising. And Jody has joined us on Facebook Live, saying she shared the show with all of her groups. Thank you so much, Jody. And she said yes on the bloodline continuum. Yes, blood. An energy line lives on. And, of course.
Hi, Sam. Can you hear me?
Yes. You said the show. Yes. the show, yes. But, yeah, go ahead, Mama AZ. We can hear you loud and clear.
Okay. I'm outside and looking at the top of the mountains and doing my best not to cry. I am so proud to be on this planet. I'm so grateful to be on this planet with you ladies, Dr. V and Dr. Green, Dr. Lateef and Jody. And you just, I'm still here at the Gables, and you just make this so much easier for me to go through this chapter of my life. Family, I love you guys. Now, add the dates up. Add the dates. What's the energy of this day? I think it's a 7, but I'm not sure.
Well, 21. I don't know how to do the numerology addition and calculation.
Yeah, you do. Okay, you calculated it. The 8th month is the 2021, which is 5. And then it's the 8th day. I mean, it's the 12th day. You add up all of those digits, add it up, somebody. What does that come to?
Oh, Lord. Okay. 8?
Yeah, I need a piece of paper. And Zelda says, we have been programmed to live on the outside of ourselves, but the power is within. Cell phone,
yes.
Netflix, Blue, Prime Video, Daily News, all designed to keep us disconnected and distracted. And that's the key thing. We need to take this pandemic time and go within. This is an opportunity for us to disconnect from all of those things and go within, because that's where the connection to the Creator is. That's where the connection is to our
all soul. The
that's where all the power is. And
that's right. So I'm listening.
Jody,
I know it's
love you, Mama.
The show is hey, Jody. Hey, hey. This is such a wonderful time, family, to be on the planet. Just remember, add up the dates of this day. Today is the 12th, it's the 8th month, and it's 2021. So you add up all of those digits. And whatever you get, that's the energy path of today. It's very important. So I'll just listen, and thank you for the opportunity. I snuck out. I'm not supposed to be in this area, but you know me. So thank you, Dr. V, for being at the beach and allowing the planet to share the sunrise with you. So thank us. Aho. Love you. Love us.
Yeah, okay. Now, I don't know how to add this up because I got 8 plus 12 plus 20 plus 21. I don't know. I got 61, which I don't know if you add that together.
Yeah, that's
7.
I'll get right to it. It's the day of the 7th.
I guess it's 7. Day. Okay.
It's completion.
Yes, you got it. You got it. That's very spiritual, very powerful day to be sharing this with Dr. Green and the rest of the family. So I'm proud of all of you. I'm so grateful that you are in my life. I'm so grateful that you're in that body, those bodies that you're in, family. So thank us.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Okay, before you hang up, I need to tell you something, please. Are you there?
She's still there. Go right ahead. She's still there.
You are having a spiritual transformation. You're getting ready to go into a spiritual transformation. And that transformation is going to give you more enlightenment. It's going to get there. That's why you've been really, if you notice that your heart has been welding up lately, it's because that's where it first actually occurs. It occurs in the heart. All of the issues that were previously from childhood is being dealt with during this spiritual transformation. And you are, because you have a clear space, a spiritual clear plane that, you know, you're actually going up in certain levels. And it's so much work left for you to do. You're not finished. So you're actually being prepared this season for that.
Wow.
You're being prepared in this season for that, because even though where you are, where you're residing, you know, the Creator is going to use you tremendously as you go and you give your gift to the world. And as he downloads, because he's going to download more energy, more wisdom inside of you, that's the hidden wisdom. And when that is there, you will know it, because you will start speaking it and living it. And even some of these ailments, I see that there's some healing that's getting ready to occur even in your body. There's some healing that you might have been dealing with for a long time, for a chronic illness that is getting ready to stop in its tracks. So I just wanted to share that with you.
That's what
I was hearing.
That is fantastic. Well, about 30 seconds we'll be off the air, but we certainly do want to thank all of you for listening in and joining in to Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green. Join her again next week on Thursday, and of course tomorrow. Join us for Health and Well-Being with Viata and Mama AZ. Zelda says love, light, and healing.
And we thank you all. And may you all continue to shine.
We've come to the end of our show today, but you can hear every show in the archives at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution. You can also hear today's show on the Female Solution Facebook page. Go to www.facebook.com/thefemalesolution. Leave your comments about today's show. You can always reach me on my website at www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com. Watch our TV shows, listen to our radio shows, order our books, and be sure to get your copy of the book, The Female Solution. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to thank all of you who participated in today's discussion. And to our global family listening from all around the world, we say thank you. To our family in China, xiexie. India, zanyaba. Japan, arigato. Korea, kamsahamnida. Russia, spasiba. Germany, danke. Poland, dziękuję. France, merci. Spain, gracias. Italy, grazie. Egypt, shukran. Ghana, medasi. Nigeria, eshe. South Africa, ngiyabonga. Senegal, jeret. Kenya, asante. Israel, toda. Pakistan, shukriya. Afghanistan, Tashakur. Saudi Arabia, shukran. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. Thank you. And may peace be upon you and the mercy of God and God's blessing.